Good afternoon, welcome to the Emergency Management Edition of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Natural Resources. Today we have a guest that will be joining us. Senator Corcoran will be joining us. Representative Thompson may join us also later. We were in the midst of the public hearing on House Bill 1623, which is the Department of Fish and Wildlife budget. We were hearing a Department of Fish and Wildlife overview from the director, and I think there was a point in time when there were some questions that were being answered, and I recognize that Representative Nesselis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the director would like to respond to my question yesterday about what the department is doing to increase sales of license. You can have him answer this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jim Gray, Director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think when we were just wrapping up yesterday's session, President Mesley referred to some of the things that we had done relative to trying to find new ways of promoting hunting and fishing in the state and trying to get more license sales, as well as other financial commitments from the general public for our program. One of the things that we've done, and I did mention it just in the opening remarks on our first day, was the new addition of Oregon Wildlife. One of the things you'll see as Oregon Wildlife comes online here for the next several months is a number of much more broader articles that will give the public, I think, a better understanding of what recreational opportunities are out there that can participate in, also give a little bit more background on the programs that are available to folks. In addition to that, we've just recently, in the last few months, hired a regional outreach specialist. And those folks are located in each one of our regions now, which will have a direct connection to the media of all venues, particularly the written media, where we'll be able to, at the local level, get our information out to the local anglers and hunters as to where some of the resource opportunities are available. Work very closely with those media folks on events and special events that are at the local area. We are more involved, I think, than we have in the past. State fairs and those kinds of activities where we can really connect one-on-one with the hunters and the anglers. Other things that we've done recently is at our hatcheries, one of the feature articles is an interpretive display of sturgeon in the Columbia River at our Bonneville hatchery. It was a cooperative event with the Wildlife Heritage Foundation. We actually have a new Herman sturgeon. I'm not sure if you're familiar. Herman used to be a stalwart here at the state fair where lots of people have come to learn and understand more about what the ecology is about these very significant fishes in the Columbia River and tell a little bit more about what the recreational fisheries are available for those critters. We have expanded our Oregon Outdoor Women program in the last few years. We now have 13 clinics that we hold that will be held this year. It's up from just a few as recently as 3 or 4 years ago. This involves 600-plus women of all ages that come to learn about recreational outdoor activities with an emphasis on hunting and fishing, how to do it, what equipment is needed. It's really a lot of energy by a lot of folks. A lot of these courses are put on by volunteers with just one leadership person out of our agency. We held many angler education clinics this last year. It involved over 20,000 people. State. This continues to grow. We're very involved with the U.S. Forest Service and their free fishing weekend that happens every year in June. This is an opportunity for us to put on clinics at our hatcheries around the state and, again, get new folks involved in fishing and a better understanding of where those recreational opportunities are and how to participate. We recently completed a outreach survey, and Senator Ferrioli, this is one that you had recommended to us a while back, to learn a little bit more about why we're losing some of our hunters and fishermen from our overall customer base. One of the things we learned, and this is a very preliminary study, but it told us that one of the key issues affecting people in this state relative to coming back, if they're not what we might consider someone that's very involved in hunting and fishing from an early age and they're more of a casual participant, in this questionnaire we found that one of the primary reasons for them not coming back was due to their time and other social activities that were essentially impacting their ability to participate on a regular basis. And they were more inclined to not go fishing or not participate in terms of purchasing a hunting or fishing license because of that. I think, again, what we'll be trying to do more and more in the future is take this information that we're learning about our current customer base and those that aren't participating at the level we'd like to in terms of purchasing licenses and tags, and go directly to them with more information and get that information in their hands to show that there are opportunities close by in their local areas where it's not such a major issue for them to travel hundreds of miles just to participate in good hunting and fishing around the state. I think I mentioned the increase in interpretive signing in nature scaping sites around the state. Most all of our hatcheries now are incorporating some sort of educational outreach, and we're finding a greater number of folks just coming to visit hatcheries to learn more about it and actually see these species in our hatcheries, where we have an opportunity to get one-on-one with them, with our hatchery folks, as well as these interpretive displays that teaches them a little bit more about what the whole issue of watershed management is all about. I think that's just a quick overview. We have a number of other programs within our agency that we're just now bringing back online. Naturescaping is one of those. When we were in our downsizing mode in the last 3 or 4 years, naturescaping is one that has fallen to the side simply because we don't have the resources to continue it. But we were averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of 900 folks going through a naturescaping course that, again, was put on by volunteers trained by our department staff. And that was another opportunity for people to get a better understanding of what they can do on their own properties to attract wildlife, provide wildlife habitat and viewing opportunities, and again, making a connection between ourselves and our customer base out there. We have angler education programs. We have a considerable amount of educational opportunities through youth out of our hunter education program, and the list goes on. I guess what we're doing now, Representative Measurely, is really trying to upgrade those. We're trying to put our resources back in some of those key programs that I think we've backed off on in terms of connecting to the local communities. So outreach specialists will be one of the keys to that, I believe.
Thank you, Chair, Representative Mishra.
So we proceed to the order of business. Unless there are further questions from the committee about the revenue opportunity.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I thought I would provide, I see Senator George is not here today, but one of the requests from yesterday was at least a listing of all the properties that we own in the state, and I've got the summary pages here. They're categorized by those that we actually hold fee title to, those that we have easements, and then the number of acres we have under agreement. And we'll be putting together some of the more specific information that Representative Mesley was looking for, and we'll have those summaries tomorrow. I did want to mention one thing in terms of reviewing some of this information. I think I made a statement yesterday that all of our properties we pay in lieu of taxes. I was really thinking more of those that we purchased for habitat or our wildlife areas. All of those are. There is a statute that essentially exempts all state properties from in lieu of taxes, like our building structures. It actually exempts many of our hatcheries and then those boat ramps, those many boat facilities across the state. So I did want to correct that statement I made yesterday.
Well, Senator George usually makes it after he's made testimony in the morning, so I think he'll be interested in that one.
With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to our Wildlife Director, Rich Berry, and he'll give you an overview of the Wildlife Division programs.
Thank you.
Chair Farrelly, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rich Berry. I'm the Wildlife Division Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. This morning, what I would like to do is just give you a brief overview kind of what the Wildlife Division is. It's a very diverse program with a diverse number of critters that we oversee. We have three main programs within the division, and so I'd kind of like to maybe just walk you through each one of those. The information in the package that we provided to you, page 21 is where the division highlights are, and page 19 is a listing, I believe, of kind of all the funding for each of the programs, and it's the top three programs on that page that relate to the Wildlife Division. The Wildlife Division is responsible for management for all wildlife except for the fish and the other marine life, so that creates a wide variety of animals that we oversee. We go all the way from what's typically called big game animals, deer and elk, to game birds, to what's the non-game species, which is down to the salamanders, those types of things that are found throughout the state. And we also have regulatory authority over such things like beaver, fox, that type of thing. As you can see on your printout there, the Wildlife Division is the second largest division within the agency. We follow behind the Fish Division. It consumes about 16% of both the agency budget and about 16% of the personnel. The funding that we get is a small amount of general fund, and I'll talk about that specific to one program. The other fund, which is our tags and licenses and some surcharges, those types of things, that's our biggest funding source. And then also we obtain some federal funding, and that's primarily through Pittman-Robinson Act, which is an excise tax on firearms, those types of things. We also get funding from the Volatile Power Administration. One of the things I guess I would just like to make a point about in wildlife management, and it's true really of all fish and wildlife management, is we cannot do this without cooperation from others. And a critical component for the wildlife especially is working with private landowners, because so many of the birds and animals are moving throughout time as they move from one place to another for feeding or survive winters. And so our cooperative work with the landowners, which I'll talk about primarily under our habitat program, is a critical element of the success of the fish and wildlife that we have within the state. Just to give you kind of a highlight, I think yesterday one of the numbers that was by Dr. Carter was we have about 300,000 hunters within the state. Numbers harvested, just to give you an idea, is annually around 70,000 deer, 23,000 elk, over 400,000 pheasants, 400,000 ducks, and about 50,000 geese. Then in our wildlife viewing, you also talked about that a little bit, and that's people looking at wildlife in some form or another is in the hundreds of thousands, and whether that be on some of our facilities or whether it just be people that may be driving throughout the state. The first major program that we have within the division is our wildlife game program. That's the largest program. Within that one, we have people within our Portland office. Those are what we call our staff specialists. They deal with the Portland office. We do something with our policy development. Major coordination at a wide program level, whether it be with other state agencies or whether it be federal agencies or tribes. There we develop our management plan. We also develop all of our regulations and print all the regulation books. And that's where the main component of all the information collected from the field comes in. We compile all the information on the wildlife resources within the state. At the field level, it's kind of our on-the-ground people. That's where the bulk of the work is carried out and the bulk of the interactions are occurring. One of the key elements for us on the wildlife side is with other species is our inventories that we're conducting. New technology is being developed within those fields, and for us to keep up with that technology and also find new methods to enumerate some of these animals is a challenging task. We also work as technical advisors in the field, work with our watershed districts, work with our local entities, counties, those types of things. They do land use planning. These are critical elements of what our people are doing. Probably one of the most key elements, though, as I talked about earlier, is our landowner contact, where we work with landowners to balance their needs, and we also try to balance the needs of wildlife resources. And from that, we can provide a number of things, whether it may be just technical advice. Could be such things as wildlife enhancement projects, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. It's also working with landowners as we try to develop such things as access for hunters to have a place to hunt. And another key element that we have is also our public involvement, our volunteer program, a large number of volunteers that work both on the fish and wildlife side. Another key element that our field staff works with, and you'll hear more about, is kind of our damage complaints, and that's interactions with the wildlife resources and some of the land practices that may be going on and how we can work with landowners to alleviate those. Also within our game program is our research section. Some of the key elements that we completed within the past biennium was what we call our Westside Bull Elk Management Strategies, where we resolved a major issue on the entire west side. Northwest Oregon of how to manage bull elk. That was a major endeavor involving lots of people in the process. We also had to deal with a major goose depredation problem occurring within the Willamette Valley system. Many of the birds that we work with are all kind of protected through federal treaties, those types of things. So dealing with geese and those types of birds is a difficult task because we do not have sole authority to manage those. But through some federal funding, we were able to enhance the goose harvest and hopefully reduce some of the depredation that was occurring. We also had some bighorn sheep introduced in the Hell's Canyon under part of a program, a cooperative program that we have with others. We also have some major programs working with landowners where we provided public access. One of them was called our Upland Cooperative Access Program, primarily in Northeast Oregon, where over 100,000 acres of private land were open to hunter access, where we work cooperatively with that. We also have areas that are called regulated hunt areas. Those are areas where we work with a cooperative landowner. Many times they may allow public access, but they want some type of regulation or restriction. Part of our program then may in fact be using some dollars to hire some state police cadets to help with enforcement issues, that type of thing. But it's a cooperative program between ourselves. Another major undertaking that we have is what we call our youth hunt opportunities. One of the things that Director Greer, as he talked about, how do we try to keep people either involved, but it's also how do we recruit new people into the hunting program. We have established some areas that are only open to youth. Some of those are on our wildlife management areas. We've also established some hunts that are only open to youth. And we also provide, under our controlled hunt process, a first-time youth, guaranteeing the youth that in particular hunts, they will, in fact, get a tag when they apply for a first time. And that way it gives them the chance, the opportunity to participate in the hunting program.
A question of reference team. Does NRA help out with that program at all? Are they involved?
We have many cooperatives with our hunting groups. I can't remember specifically if NRA is involved, but I'm certainly a lot of the training that goes on as we do our hunter training, they're involved with providing material for that.
First time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know, Rick, whether you can answer this or Mr. Greer, you want to answer this. As I like through your schematic of the organization chart, I'm confused. The Fish Division does not have a habitat segment. The Wildlife Division does have a habitat segment, and yet we have a habitat division, and I'm concerned exactly what those roles are. How they communicate, maybe even specifically what those tasks are. And I guess, quite frankly, the main question is what is the need for a habitat division when you have this incorporated within the other divisions themselves? And if there's a lack of, if there is good communication between all those divisions, or if as we talked briefly, I believe it was on Monday, in the permitting process alone, let alone all the other landowner coordination and work you do, if you divide it up amongst so many other people and you don't have staff in all of the offices, it might be more problematic than what we're solving. But
I'm going to hear your phone, sir.
Well, go ahead. First off, I'm just confused as to why there's a habitat implementation department in the Wildlife Division, and there doesn't seem to be anything in habitat in the Fish Division.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mesley, I think we'll be able to speak specifically to that as we get to the other divisions, but I think what we have here in the Wildlife Division are some very on-the-ground, site-specific kinds of activities that Rick will be speaking to here relative to the habitat program. Within that, we'll talk about the Access and Habitat program, which is a separate board within the Wildlife Division. Also, there's a habitat component in terms of wildlife biologists doing specific on-the-ground habitat improvement and enhancement activities. Those are also directed through Wildlife Division. The Habitat Division itself, it's more of the environmental issues, and that's where I think more of the specific direction comes up to these permitting activities on the ground that you're speaking to in terms of making sure we're getting the same kind of direction uniformly throughout the whole state. That's where those specific policies and activities occur relative to establishing the direction for how we'll comment on, say, a film removal. That's in the habitat division. It's more of an environmental aspect of how habitat is affected. On the wildlife side, it's more of the enhancement and implementation of on-the-ground activities that are essentially funded through the Wildlife Division and directed and accomplished by our field people. And Rich will speak specifically to the Wildlife Division's component of that. And then Kay Brown, our Habitat Division Director, will come in and tell you more specifically. And I think you'll see a very definitive difference between
them. Mr. Chair, could I do a follow-up?
Follow-up?
I'd be curious as to is there specific training for those people who are staffed in the habitat, not only within the wildlife, but in the Habitat Division?
And it seemed to me that those folks that are on the ground working with the landowners and working with this habitat would be maybe even closer to the issues, even in the permitting process, just with their contacts and their knowledge of what's going on within the region than the habitat.
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate statement. Rich, you want to speak to some of those?
Representative Nestle, maybe what I might do is just proceed and give you an overview of our Habitat One. That's why I didn't let Director Gere see my notes, because he might steal all my thunder.
Well, I apologize. I thought you were going to go through that.
No, I'll get to the Habitat One, then I'll let Richard's question specifically. In our Habitat Division, or Habitat Program, as Director Gere stated, those are on the ground. That's the on-the-ground programs where we deal with the landowners, and yes, Representative Meserly, these are people who their backgrounds are such that they have worked with those areas. Many of them may have agricultural backgrounds, etc. We have a number of programs within the Habitat Division. I'll kind of talk, we have a, just to give you an idea of what we actually call it, in a way I call this our Landowner Assistance Program, because that's what it is. It's working with landowners to help solve issues related with wildlife and with private land. We have dollars set aside for what's called our Wildlife Damage Control Program. That's where we go in, work with landowners, help them solve some of their damage. It could be such things as fencing. It could be barriers around haystacks, those types of things. We also have a program, what's called our Green Forage Program. With that one, it's improving forage or providing alternative food for wildlife, helping landowners where they may actually plant some crops to pull areas to certain ones, or we'll reimburse them for, or help them as they suffer some of the damages, maybe seeding, fertilization, that type of thing. In Northeast Oregon, we have a program which is called DEER. It's Deer Enhancement and Restoration. Look at improving mule deer habitat. Again, such things as shrubs, seeding, that type of thing. We have over 500 landowners that have worked with this program. We also have a major habitat improvement program on a statewide level. And again, dealing with all sorts of wildlife issues. This program, we have many partners that work with us, foundations, et cetera, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, these types of programs assist in that type of endeavor. Also associated with our wildlife habitat programs, and within that program budget, is our wildlife management areas. We have 12 major wildlife management areas where we have staffing. An example of that, for example, in the Portland area, the Sauvie Island Wildlife Management Area, a number of them scattered then throughout the state. The objective of the Wildlife Management Area is to help alleviate issues related to wildlife with adjacent landowners. For example, Sauvie Island one is to hopefully keep ducks and geese in Sauvie Island area, not on adjacent lands. Our elk ones are the same type. So there are major areas where we are, in fact, managing the land. And on many of these, we do cooperative management with adjacent landowners. We may share crop type things, allow them to come in. They're under agreements, barter agreements, where local landowners are doing some of the work under some type of an agreement in reimbursement level. Those are major ones. That's primarily funded, and all the land was purchased with federal funds, with the state providing a match there. Another major component under our habitat program is our access and habitat program that Director Greer talked about. And that's one that was started in, I believe it was 1993, where the legislature passed a surcharge on hunting licenses. And it is similar to on the fish side, what's called the Restoration Enhancement Program. But a $2 surcharge is placed on hunting licenses and put into a special program to provide access and habitat throughout the state. There's a number of local boards that have been established. All the projects go through the local level. Then they come up to the statewide Access and Habitat Board, and eventually the commission then approves the projects. Within the last biennium so far, 93% of the projects have provided some type of access. We've opened up over 3.8 million acres of public land, or excuse me, of private land for public hunting, and we've enhanced over 22,000 acres of private land. That kind of gives an overview, Representative Meserly, of the habitat program. Does that answer the questions that you have? But again, this is the on-the-ground people.
Yeah. Oh, you have Representative Jensen and Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the overview, but one of the questions that I thought was asked that I didn't get the answer to was
why do we have a habitat implementation under the Wildlife Division, and I don't see one under the Fish Division?
Representative Jim, I think that the main difference would be within the wildlife side, because of our wildlife management areas and because of the work that we do with private landowners, we have specific funding and programs specifically to fund cooperative programs with adjacent landowners. Under the fish side, we do not have those types of revenues. Most of the types of revenues from the fish side come from various funding sources, whether it be GWEB or whether it be could be some R&D projects. Our local field biologists and our STEP biologists, which is our volunteer program, work with local landowners, but many of the projects that are carried out may be done partly with ourselves, but a lot of times it may be under watershed programs, that maybe some other entities that are carrying them out. So we just have not had on the fish side the dollars to do a major program as we have on the wildlife side called habitat implementation.
Follow, Mr. Chairman.
Follow.
Could you tell me in your organizational chart when this habitat in wildlife first appeared in the organization?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, it's been there a long, long time, and I believe we've had a habitat component within the Wildlife Division. I know it's been there as long as I've worked for the out there for 25 years. We probably had more dollars, as Rich said, 25, 30 years ago when the Pittman-Robertson Fund was very high in terms of the returns to the Fish and Wildlife Agency for that excise tax dollars. And those went right into very specific on-the-ground activities. A lot of it was associated to purchase and expansion of some of our existing wildlife areas today. But we also had larger habitat crews that were actually doing habitat projects throughout the entire state. In the case of Northeast Oregon, we still have a crew that works on private and public lands wherever we can get cooperative dollars to do habitat improvement all across Northeast Oregon. So it's been there for a very long period of time. Over the years, admittedly, it shrunk based on the revenue resources, and I think Rick is giving you an accurate description of the difference between Fish and Wildlife Divisions. It's really based on the funding and the activities associated to habitat improvement on the ground. I can't give you the exact date, I'm sorry, but it has been there for a long, long time.
Thank you.
I might add, Representative, as we asked the question of our habitat biologists assisting in permitting, et cetera, and yes, they do. I think it will probably, as you've noticed over here, our habitat structure, where we'll bring them all together under the watershed manager, that will even aid those discussions. Our final program that we have in the
question or question.
Thank you. I'm noticing in my budget summary where we have habitat division in ODFW, and within your division we have a habitat program, and so it's an obvious question. So why do we have a program and division versus a program and a division? So that's one question. And then, see on page 20, it's on page 19, that the budget for the Wildlife Habitat program in your division comes out to $11,874, while as in the summary that it comes out to $4.7 million, of which $1.25 million is general funds. So it can make you wonder, if the program is bigger than the division, within your department. And then also, I'm just kind of curious in terms of the symbiosis between your habitat programs and the Oregon plan and helping the salmon. Because I would think that most of your efforts that have to do with improving salmon have improving game habitat and other habitats and health of the salmon ecosystem. Both three things. The division program, the size of the program versus the division, and the habitat, the salmon plan, symbiosis, and the habitat program.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, maybe I can start with the last one first. Yes, our habitat program essentially, maybe I better just start from the beginning in terms of the difference between the habitat division and the other activities that go on in, inside the agency relative to habitat improvement or enhancement. Our habitat division, I think Kay Brown, when she speaks forward with her overview, will give you the more specifics in terms of their involvement in very specific activities that have a lot to do with permitting activities relative to hydro, water resource activities. On the habitat side, we have a forestry or a land section part of the habitat division that focuses on what our comments and reviews will be in terms of state forestry activities, U.S. Fish and Water, U.S. Forest Service and BLM activities. There's a constant connection between ourselves and other state and federal agencies for input on their activities and what we believe those activities will do to affect fish and wildlife habitat. Our habitat division really focuses in on those statewide kinds of activities. Where we look at Rich's program here, he's got a very specific...
What I'm seeing is that your division is more administrative and then, therefore, this program is probably more on the ground.
That's a better way to describe it. So in terms of how we would actually interface with the Oregon plan, we would use the policies, standards, and guidelines that are essentially created out of the habitat division. Those then go out to our field staff. Those are utilized by the fish biologists in terms of how they're going to create and implement habitat projects for the Oregon plan relative to riparian improvements and working with private landowners. The same thing would be on the wildlife side, where we have a tremendous amount of interaction between all the land management agencies. Those policies and guidelines are what they use in terms of their interactions. So there is a connection, and I think you'll see more of it. This organizational chart that we're moving to here, or organizational operation, will start linking all of our fish and wildlife biologists more closely to the habitat base itself. So it'll be imperative that we have those very clear and concise policy directives so that we're all working off the same page. That's what we're moving to, I think, more rapidly now than we ever have before. And you'll see those linkages between all three of the divisions. There's been some talk in past years relative to your question on division priorities and size of program as to where those should sit within the organization. And because of these very specific policy-driven issues that come to our agency, it has always been, I believe, to our benefit to have a habitat division separate from those fish and wildlife divisions because they overlap all programs within the entire agency and all issues. By statute, we are to have created a separate wildlife division and a separate fish division. And in that sense, that's how our monies come to us, and that's how our programs have been directed over all these years. So that habitat division really is the linkage between the two. At some point in time, we've been looking at this internally in terms of how we all are organized. There will probably be a good time or an opportunity to take any or parts of those habitat programs in the other two divisions, fish and wildlife, and bring them into the habitat division, simply because I think there's questions about where do I get to my answer. I think we'll be able to keep the on-the-ground activities very specific to the wildlife division because of funding. But some of these other habitat policy or administrative-driven issues probably should sit within that same division simply because they are kind of the connection or the overview of all agency activities relative to habitat.
Representative King, you are correct. I mean, whether we do some fish habitat improvement or wildlife habitat improvement, but all species can benefit, and lots of times you really can't break the funding down. If we do a lot of the funding, it's primarily a wildlife one, but it could also have fish benefits, just as some of the fish projects may. Our last program within the wildlife division of the three, and this is actually our smallest program, is what's called our wildlife diversity program. This is a program that deals with kind of everything that really isn't hunted for, generally is how it's referred to, and the other name for it at times you'll hear it referred to as the non-game program. However, this is a program that really where most of the species within the state of Oregon fall. Over 600 species that are out there, and such things as frogs and salamanders and bats and a lot of these other things that, if in fact not managed appropriately, all have potential consequences for some actions that we as citizens may take should we fall under the Endangered Species Act or something like that. This program is unique, and this is the only portion within the Wildlife Division where we receive general fund. And I believe that the general fund component came about from the fact that really these are species that belong to all Oregonians. They're not species that are hunted or fished for, and that therefore all of us have need to contribute to their management. The other component, which is also unique here, is within our other funds, is a component of that, about $250,000 biennium, come from the tax checkoff. As you may recall, when you fill out your taxes at the bottom, kind of just before, if you have a refund, it asks you for some, if you may want to make some contributions. And one of the first and only one that started on the tax checkoff was the non-game fund. Subsequently, in other legislative sessions, additional checkoffs were added. But that also was I believe the legislature set that as a tone at that point in time, asking all Oregonians to help contribute to the management of these species. Our federal funding that comes from this tends to be very specific. We obtain federal funding where most of that dollars goes out for outside grants, working with universities, counties, other entities, and it's specific to some particular animal that we're dealing with. So this is kind of, it's a small program, yet it's one that does have major bearing on animals within the state. Also within this program,
This is the program, I think, that responds to like the Carissa incident. Was there unanticipated expenses associated with that? And if so, what was that?
Senator Charnel, Senator Corcoran, at the moment, we hopefully are recovering all of our expenses. We work through the Department of Environmental Quality and all of our time, those types of things that have all been accounted for. And the individuals responsible for this bill or their insurance will, in fact, reimburse us for those costs. But you are correct. Another component of this is where we have what are called our spill response for wildlife rehabilitation. That individual is within this program, and we have a lead response, if correct, to respond to those types of incidents. Hopefully, we don't have many of those.
But you expect, Mr. Small, you expect to recoup the cost then from either the pet or the insurance?
Okay. The other component within the Wildlife Diversity Program, as far as within the budget, is where our marine mammal management program also falls. Again, marine mammals, lots of issues related to that. Again, federally protected creates some major problems with how we deal with that management. Some of the key things that we have done through the last biennium, at the request of the legislature last session, they had asked us to take a look at our sale of wildlife parts, what parts of wildlife could or could not be sold. Senator Fisher was a key component of that advisory committee, and new rules were adopted and passed out the recommendation of the committee. We also have
question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to back up to the question of Senator Corker. You have budgeted for the staff the normal operations that went down to the new Carissa. So when you bill out for that money, I would assume you bill at full cost to the department. Does the department hire new staff to cover your normal programs while those folks are working on the special project? Or is that to go up a surplus in your budget, or exactly how does that cash flow, and what does that mean to the total budget?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a shot at that, Mr. Representative Miserly. The one thing we try to, where we can, where we have the opportunity and the time on a special situation like the new Carissa, where it is a major impact to our overall program and activities, try to have a backfill for some of those people that would be long-term in terms of those particular activities. This one was a very significant impact, because it ranged nearly coast-wide. We were continuing to do surveys, so our non-game biologists, our wildlife diversity biologists, worked across their normal duties. A lot of those activities just don't get accomplished, and we'll have to come back and probably look at what didn't get done and see what some of these dollars might be able to backfill some of those activities, if in fact it was a project that got set aside that could be completed at a later time. But we'll probably see the majority of those dollars just come back into our ending balance, because oftentimes the primary cost of these people's activities was their their own personal services time as opposed to a lot of additional expenses. There will be some, I think, associated to travel and so forth.
Mr. Chair, I understand that. So you would have overtime and travel costs and motel costs and all that kind of stuff. But it would also seem to me that you're probably going to generate a surplus revenue just because some of those projects that you would normally be doing will be set back in time. We'll pick them up at a later budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Misery, that's correct. I wouldn't call it a surplus. I think it would be simply a replacement cost for a lot of the activities we just haven't been able to get accomplished.
Senator Connor.
Just before we get off the subject of the ESA, I'm kind of curious. The 93 that passed a little bill that basically said that Oregon shouldn't be duplicative in listing a species, and that the federal government has the primary responsibility for listing a species that's threatened or endangered. And I think you folks are in the process of developing or have developed at least administrative rules in that respect. My question is Oregon, through ODFW, still listing species as threatened or endangered?
Chair Fairley with Senator Tarno, yes, under the ESA, the state still does have ESA responsibilities, and for species, anybody can request. And we have one request pending, for example, right now for the Washington brown squirrel. Could request that be listed under the State Endangered Species Act. There are different criteria for the act. One of the things when the legislation was passed, it gave us a number of issues to look at, verifiable scientific information, specific criteria that had to be met before one could be listed, which actually were different under the Federal Endangered Species Act.
Mr. Chair, follow
up?
Are those rules developed, those ministry rules, to comply with?
Senator Connell, yes, they are developed.
Further questions?
Chair, I think the whole committee should get copies of that.
Copies, we can provide you with copies of the administrative rules.
Actually, they're already in printed form, right there. They're already in printed form.
Yes.
Found.
In fact, I have a copy of them here.
Thank you.
Just in some highlights of things going on, we are, with a number of things that we do, and particularly with the Wildlife Diversity Program, is hopefully to prevent species from being listed, so therefore we have cooperative programs with other entities, a number of cities, counties, other agencies cooperate, and that's part of our goal under this program, hopefully to prevent things from being listed either from the state side or the federal side. There are some bright spots. The bald eagle is being hopefully going to be delisted on the federal side as also over the state side. American peregrine falcon is also looking to be downlisted. Currently it's endangered, down to threatened. We also have the Arctic peregrine falcon that's going to be delisted. So some of the programs are beginning to show some results. We also have down in southwest Oregon will be a delisting of the Columbia white-tailed deer. That will be occurring later this month from the federal side. Snowy plover population, which that was in great news and kind of protection for new Carissa. The population numbers are not increasing. However, the number of breeding females is increasing, which gives us hope that we're maybe turning a corner in that one. But some of these species, and particularly like the new Carissa, brought to light just some of these issues and some of the critical concerns that address some of these. So we also have a number of studies going on within the Willamette Valley on a number of species, and we will be working as part of the Willamette Initiative, which is looking at the whole Willamette Basin, wildlife species and fish species. Our staff will be working with that group that's been formed in the Willamette Initiative to provide input for that. So hopefully, Mr. Chair, that will give you kind of an overview of the committee. We have many challenges, or I guess I might say opportunities out there. I think we have a very dedicated staff that is looking to deal with these, and I think the governor's budget is proposed will provide the resources to do that. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Jensen.
Thank you. As I look at the license sales and fees, and that seems to be a primary method of funding for the department. Looking at deer license tags are off dramatically, I think, from the 1980s. In fact, have declined to a 20-year low. Are there reasons that you could share with me why that is taking place?
Jensen, there can be a couple of things. One of the things that we have done, yesterday you heard testimony from Dr. Carter that we have gone to a controlled hunt type of hunting situation in some areas. What that does is compared to a general season, which essentially says anybody can buy a tag and anybody can come hunting. We have limited the number of hunters for, it could be for biological reasons. It also could be just to provide greater hunting experiences for the hunters. We also have one thing that can fluctuate is depending on the size of the deer herds. If they continue above our management objectives, we may then institute more antlerless hunts, trying to bring it down so we can alleviate damage and so on. So we can see some fluctuation occurring in that. But certainly going to some of the controlled hunts will have changed some of the number of tags available.
Actually, we ever sent something in there?
Follow-up on that. What do you, what do we have on harvest figures for their over that 20-year period? What's the variation?
I can get a book here. We currently harvest about 70,000 deer. If you want to have a book that can give you a number over what's happened since going for 20 years back.
I'd be interested in that, interested in whether the controlled hunt and what we're doing now is affecting and how it's affecting the harvest.
President Jensen, if you like, what we could do is provide you copies of these tables, and we put out a big game statistic report. In fact, I'll get you a copy, and it kind of shows everything you want to know about the harvest of deer, elk, bear, cougar, etc. And Mr. Chair, we will provide it to all members of the committee.
I think everybody would like to.
Yeah, I would be very interested in that one here. Thank you.
Senator Sherman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds like a major restructuring is occurring within the agency. Do you view it that way?
Senator George, which way? Yeah. I'll let Director Burr start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator George. I don't know how you might refer to it as a major change. It's a significant change, I think, in terms of how we'll be doing business in the future. In terms of the organizational changes themselves, I don't think they'll be that significant. It does sound very broad-reaching when we say we're going to go from our current 18 fish districts and 22 wildlife districts down to 10 watershed districts. I think that's significant in terms of how we portray our information to the general public and making sure they know who the person is they need to go to for that information. But those people will still be in those primary offices around the state. What we're trying to do, though, is get those decisions to the lowest level, at the same time have accountability at the lowest level. We've made some changes, I think, in our administration staff out of the Portland office as well, relative in trying to get more accountability in terms of how the divisions put out directives, policies, and so forth, so that they're all unified in terms of the agency being very clear on what we're trying to accomplish and getting that information then down to the local level as well. So some of these changes, yes, on the surface, I think they look significant. In terms of what they do to our overall reporting process from the ground troops back up through the Portland headquarters staff, I don't think it's that significant. The changes are, I think, more in terms of looking at the ground, looking at what the priorities are, and then taking those resources, whether fish, wildlife, or habitat biologists, and making a priority statement in more of an effective and efficient way of getting the job done than we've done in the past.
Thank you. I have one after that, too, if I could. The question I think would be is there a change in emphasis? You mentioned you used that word. And is it going to be more fish and less wildlife, more wildlife? You know, what is going to be the balance as this restructuring occurs?
Mr. Chair and Senator George, the focus is really going to be on really what our mission is, I think. We're looking at long-term, and we want to have viable fish and wildlife populations, and we want to be able to have surpluses out there so the general public can enjoy them on both the consumptive and the non-consumptive side. I think my emphasis then is going more towards, well, what do we need to do for the public to make sure they understand how our decisions are being made and what kind of opportunities are we providing for them. So there's a customer service focus that I don't think we've had in the past. There'll be more of an accountability focus that we have not seen in the past, I don't believe. And that'll be a part of this whole organizational change. Those will be emphases that you'll see more in the future, I think, in terms of holding our feet to the fire, in terms of, well, essentially we're providing you this budget as a review of what we're providing to the general public for programs and services. We want to make sure you know how we're implementing them on the ground, and if we're not meeting those charges, then we're going to do whatever we can to make sure we do.
Okay, and my final follow-up is, in the last 6 to 12 months, how many new employees have been added within the agency?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I don't believe we have any new employees. We did do, we did hire some new positions actually in the last year or so. Jack, I'm thinking of our point-of-sale program. When we were dropped essentially by GTEC for implementing the point-of-sale program for our licensed agents across the state, we took that contract on ourselves. We took it back. And so we did hire some new positions in those areas. We did downsize some positions to create some new positions for effectiveness and efficiencies, such as our legislative liaison, Joe Rowler. We did not have a permanent position in place for that. So in terms of new positions, we haven't filled any new positions. We've downsized some existing ones to create what we believe is more important positions to be more effective in the future.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Berry, you mentioned the Willamette Restoration Initiative. And, my question is going to be much broader than just your wildlife department, but I'm curious, with the executive order from the governor creating the committee and the relationships in between Fish and Wildlife Department and others, I'm curious how that impacts not only the operation of your department, but also how that impacts your budgets and how much of your budgets are reflecting that effort for that committee and that initiative.
Chair Fairlily, Representative Nesterly, and I'll answer from the wildlife side. The work that we have been doing and a lot of the work in the Willamette Valley has been funded through the Bonneville Power Administration under the wildlife mitigation. I guess I don't see the impact from the work as being a major change from what we're currently doing. It's now focused and being better utilized, I guess, by various planning entities, at least from our staff that's working within the program. We have been working, it's now being looked at, I guess, from, I guess I'll say, the Willamette River watershed approach instead of some of our key people were actually in the Corvallis area, the Eugene area where they were working. It's now broadening that to give a broader perspective. Their work is similar to what they were currently doing. I think now it's more useful and available to others to utilize within the whole planning process.
Mr. Chair, I realize with the other divisions you might want to come back at a later time, but as I understand the executive order that your departments are required to consult or communicate or coordinate or whatever with the committee, it looked to me like maybe another obstacle or another hurdle to go through along with all of your other communications and hearings and this type of thing as you do your work. But also, I'm very interested in how much of your budgets and what parts of your budgets are related specifically to that executive order and to projects under that event.
Representative Merkley, we can provide you that. Again, I would look at, I guess, from the work that we're currently doing is that, I mean, what our agency is technical advisors to entities such as this, and that's what we're doing is providing the information that we are collecting and working with on a daily basis to that.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up briefly. From what I hear you say, that would not affect your budget. You're already budgeting for those programs. And yet in some other budget documents, I see it defined as related to the river.
I think when Dr. DeHart gets here for Fish Division, you will see a different approach for that from what we're seeing on the wildlife side.
Thank you.
Another question? Chair has a couple. And I think this may have been discussed, as you've got with record elk populations and record deer populations and eroding license sales. I wonder if those curves are being driven by, obviously, other than the opportunity that
populations out there. So the uncertainty is the tag draw. A lot of the complaints I hear more than any other one. The landowner preferences benefit landowners in terms of management and animal damage control, but I think hunters view those as inherently unfair. You know, one of the things I hear from west side hunters that come to the east side is that there's almost a hostility building up between landowners and hunters because you don't already have a place to hunt. And you go over and there's posted lands, and you know that landowners get preferences and tags. The reaction of the hunter from the west side is that somehow the landowner has it all sewn up, you know, and that they, there's some kind of an insider situation. And I'm wondering how we balance the landowner preference, which helps animal damage control, with the opportunity for hunters, and if there's a better way to match people up. I know that you can call now and talk to a landowner, and you have to have a landowner identified to get to apply for some of those preference special hunts. And I'm not sure that the landowner tag system is fully implemented, fully operational, and fully understood by people. I think it's not. The seasons seem illogical to most hunters, especially the openings and closings. There's just a flurry of openings and closings. And I think that was meant to offer the widest possible set of opportunities to hunters, but I'm not sure if that just confuses the issue, especially when start days are Wednesday. And if you've got, if you wanted to encourage families to hunt, that's not a good day to start a hunt. And if you want to take into consideration the fact that people work five days a week, usually a Monday through Friday schedule, Wednesday start dates, you have retirees and other folks a two-day jump on the, or a three-day jump on the hunt, and that means that working folks have a little bit more difficulty getting set up in the field unless you're going to take vacations for those periods. And then I'm not sure the ag hunts are as effective as they could be, either for the landowner or the department. So those are all questions that drive not off the availability of deer and elk populations, but by the management overlay on the openings, closings, seasons, availabilities, and start days. So I guess I'd like to hear a discussion of those things. And the last thing is, have you ever heard the term the Portland Mafia, and could you explain what that means? What agents in the field are telling me about what the Portland Mafia is? And
I have no idea what the Portland Mafia is, but probably could use a better explanation of that.
Well, I think almost anybody that has had an occasion to deal with the agents out in the field have heard the term. You might want to figure out what the term means. Go ahead.
Senator Ferrioli, maybe I'll start first with the Landowner Preference Program. The Landowner Preference Program is by statute and has changed since its inception, but what it was designed to do initially was that under the controlled hunt process, where only a limited number of people may draw tags for a geographic area, gives the landowner the opportunity to, in fact, draw a tag on their land. And they're within the landowner's preference. They also can, depending on their acreage that they own, the number of tags that are available to them. And what they do, in fact, have to do is to provide the names of the individuals that they have allowed to hunt and in their hunt party. That legislation is due to sunset in 2001. We have started an internal process. This would be both an internal and external process. It is a very contentious issue, as Senator Ferrioli said, whether it's fairness for those who don't own the property, those that do. But to take a look at that system and see what recommendations we may have, and when I say we, would be a combination of ourselves, the hunters, and the landowners, whether there are changes needed in the LOP language in the current statutes, and that would be one of our packages that we bring back to the legislature next session. If there are changes, some of what I'm hearing from our staff and the others is there's some things that make it a little hard for them to do on it, but other than that, it appears to be, now that it's said, it appears to be starting to work well. In our regulation book, we have a whole page dedicated to the landowner preference, so if a landowner is a hunter, they will see a whole page right there. We send out packets to landowners who participate, and I think there are about 5,000 landowners right now on a statewide basis that are participating in it. So it is an issue that will come before the next legislative session because of the sunset.
portion.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the questions relative to the landowner preferences is that if you're a landowner, particularly, you know, if you own a lot of land in eastern Oregon, and you are very concerned about what people come on your property to be allowed to hunt, and you like to regulate people that you know you can trust, you've had experience with them, that they're from the city, you know that they're safe hunters, that they respect property, that sort of thing. I think that if we, in fact, were to eliminate something like that or put more restrictions on that, you would have a reaction by, okay, I'm just going to close the hunting, and then we'd have to be worried about managing those populations that would explode. At the same time, I think the intent of the legislation, if I remember correctly, was to, in fact, provide a mechanism in which the landowner might achieve some revenue to offset the damage and the feeding that they might do, you know, during the winters and that sort of thing. Is that the case, that your understanding that we were trying to create a mechanism without actually paying for damage to allow them to achieve some revenue?
Senator George, I believe that was one of the components of it, and we do know that individuals will be, they do not sell the tag because the tag has one price, but they're selling hunting opportunities. So, and that is, Senator Early talked about, though, that still generates some of the conflict out there, but that is being done, and you're correct, that is part of what it was there for.
Do they have much control over the 35 million acres of government-owned grass?
Private landowner?
Yes.
No.
And do those hunt? So there's still an enormous, over half the state is available.
That's correct, Senator George. They must, a landowner preference, you can only hunt on your land.
Thank you.
Colleagues, you have questions prepared at 4:15 on the Senate side, and these questions are, I think, germane, so I'd like to begin here tomorrow. Questions, Senator Corcoran?
Well, I was just going to suggest you raise the issue of the Wednesday hunt start. One of the statistics that might be helpful is to show the takes through a season. There's always this assumption that there's not a real high take right at the beginning. But, you know, so biologists end up making these decisions. But that's been a curiosity to me.
Good question. I guess regarding the issue of the landowner preferences, there's so many benefits that are potential. You know, you get an opportunity for the landowner to talk to a person outside the community and they can share different perspectives on management issues and game management and outdoor recreation and so forth. That's a real positive benefit. But I'm really looking for ways to lower the conflict issues and improve the benefit potential and make sure that landowner objectives and wildlife management objectives are met. So I think there's a tremendous potential for benefit from that program. It just seems it has to be perceived by the public as a benefit and a fair and an acceptable process, and I don't know if it is now. But can we take this up tomorrow?
Yes, I just wanted to, if I could just ask a question to bring that for tomorrow. Regarding the fairness issues, I've heard follow-up on some of the health questions, and I don't know what the facts are, so if you could tell me about this. Concerns in terms of when tags are obtained from out-of-state hunters for elk tags in Oregon, and some concern that they get those and they can plan their hunts before the in-state hunters even have an opportunity to plan their hunts, and they don't know until July, and some of these folks know earlier. And I know the Guides and Hackers, not as an organization, but as a phrase, that they have to have so many hunts, but also concern, too, that those are given out earlier than individuals in Oregon and when they're trying to plan their own hunting party. So I'm curious about that information. Do we have other folks that are getting those tags earlier than just regular Oregonians trying to plan their own hunting trips?
If there's no further business to come before the committee, we're in agreement until tomorrow.
Since having Eastern Oregonians need to boil them off.